Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, I am lost in the Las Vegas. How are you?
I was going to make a what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas joke, but that thing's so worn out. I can't believe they haven't come up with a new slogan by now.
Coming up with a new slogan stays in Vegas or something. That's how that works, right?
So before we begin, how much have you slept exactly?
I know the answer to this. I have gotten no more than 4 hours a night for the past three nights. It's not even like a cool, like, oh, we've been out partying and hitting the strip and whatever. Like the first two nights, it was just like, I would go to dinner after the games. Like, games end around 9:30. You get to dinner like 10:30-ish around here. Maybe start eating in like a little after 11, and then, you know, midnight to 1, you head out or grab a drink and then head out or something like that. And then I get back and I just would write for like 2.5 hours because it's like the what to watch for the next day for summer league. So I like try to get that done so I didn't have to wake up early and do it. And then last night I hung out with some writers and had a couple drinks, but never got like, it's not like getting drunk or anything. Like, I'm just, and then I came back to the room and wrote. Like, I'm tired because I'm trying to be responsible for like my deadlines and stuff, and it's the weirdest Vegas experience I've ever had because of it.
Never try and be responsible for that. That's the decimal way.
It's awful. Responsibility is awful. That's what I would tell the kids out there.
You're doing better than I am because when I get disconnected from my wife and kid, the screw it mentality, this little gear that exists in the back of my brain from before my wife and child occurred in my life, that starts kicking in. And I've done better in recent years, even when I've been on the road for work stuff, about not letting it get in there. But man, it's like the temptation is always there to be like, whatever, like, let's just go and then stay up the entire night and then try. I've done the Vegas in years past. I've done the Vegas, stay up all night gambling and then go to the games at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was a bad scene.
Right.
I've done it before.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, well, also, I'm here for 12 days. Like, all right, this is going to be a little bit of a complaint, but with the caveat that I know I have an awesome job and these aren't real problems, but like being in Vegas for 12 days is weird. You have to pace yourself. There's this certain you get off the plane knowing how long you're here and you just kind of die inside. And like you just zombify your soul a little bit. Yep. And so it gets to the point where you're like, oh, maybe I should go do something tonight. And you're like, well, I have 10 more days at this point. So
right.
I've got time. Like I probably when the tournament kicks in next weekend and games start even later, like they start at 1 locally here. I think there are a couple of days where games start at like 4. Then maybe those days, the nights before, I'll be like, all right, yeah, I can go do something. But I'm also trying not to lose all of my money.
Also a key element. I'm sure your lady friend appreciates that.
Right.
So most impressive player from the first 4 days you've seen?
Dennis Schroeder.
Wow.
Absolutely Dennis Schroeder. Cody Zeller's been up there for sure. Jonas Valanciunas looks great. But if we're talking rookies, Dennis Schroeder has been by far the most impressive rookie to me.
Which is good because, you know, the Hawks just matched the offer on Jeff Teague for 4 years.
And that'll be good. Non-rookies, Jeff Taylor from the Bobcats looks amazing. Like, he's too good for summer league. And it's not like he's too talented. It's that his game is so polished as a role player that he gets into this environment. And it's like, I don't even think it's really hard for him to do what he wants to do on the court because he's got that year under his belt. His game doesn't require a lot of flash. It just requires space, and he's great at getting that space. He's been fantastic. I'm kind of falling for Jeff Taylor's prospects all over again.
Kemba, if they match for Henderson, Kemba, Henderson, Taylor, Al Jefferson, and either Bismack Biyombo or Cody Zeller.
Yeah, I like Zeller too. Zeller's look good. I mean, it's weird because you do have to take everything with a few grains of salt because of the competition's lower. Much lower, but I think mostly you're just looking for decision making rather than results.
I've followed into with summer league. This is how I evaluate things. I look for guys that are a healthy middle.
Yeah.
Where, You know, they're like, well, it doesn't matter if you're bad in summer league. Well, no, Joe Alexander, it was pretty evident from the time that Joe Alexander stepped on the floor at summer league that you were like, oh, no, this is not good.
I remember your reaction and you trying to, like, break it gently to Bucks bloggers who were there. And you're like, no, really, you should get out now. Just get out. I know it's 8 minutes into his career, but this is not going to happen.
This is not good. You need to give up hope now. Because it was just evident. You're watching and guys that look completely and hopelessly lost in summer league, you're just like, this is not good. Like, this is just – like, there's very evident that he is lost on this floor with guys playing this hard and this fast, and this is not even that hard and that fast. And then there's the other range, which is – I refer to as the Jared Bayless zone, which is when they're so good that they dominate summer league – it shows that they have a very specific individual skill set that may not be translatable to the NBA, because it's rare that you find a guy that's so good that he's in summer league play, he's going to be like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and dominate in a really self-centric individual talent AAU basketball way and then be able to completely translate that to an NBA team concept.
Right.
Like the guys that show out in summer league, I actually get a little nervous about, because it means that they're very good in unorganized ball. And it's just very rare that guys are exceptional in unorganized basketball and then translate well into a part. Now, the best ones are the ones that, like, they come out, they execute for like a quarter and just destroy everything. And you can tell either if they're left in, they kind of just like zero down, or the coaches just pull them because they're like, okay, this is, we don't need to see this anymore.
Right.
Like, we're done here.
Right.
Those are the best guys. They're and Greg Monroe was a great example of that a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Where
that's exactly what popped into my head.
Yeah, you watch Greg Monroe and you're just like, okay, we're good here. He's fine. So
also, CJ McCollum is just smooth. He's just really, really smooth.
He's going to win Rookie of the Year. I am absolutely convinced of this.
Yeah, no, he'd be my pick as well. I don't, you know, the questions are, how are they going to defend in the backcourt with him and Lillard? Who cares? They're going to be fun, and they're going to score, you know, 35 to 40 points per night as a tandem, which is, that's pretty good.
Hilarious moments? Tell me things that have been funny that have happened. Entertain me.
Kyle Williams nearly killed me. I've actually had a target on my I don't know if there's a bounty for taking me out.
Maybe I did that.
Okay. I was wondering.
It's for you laughing at that guy nailing me with the half court shot a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was really funny. Still funny.
I put a bounty on your head. Somebody's gonna get you.
So I show up and I'm walking into the media section, and the great Kevin Arnovitz, good friend, says, "Hey, I've got a seat right here." And it's in the front row of the media section, which is right behind the baseline. And I'm nervous about this because in my first summer league, I was sitting up in the stands where like GMs and players sit sometimes. And I saw a guy crash into the media table and destroy a guy's computer. Like, his laptop got just like torn apart because of the collision. And I was like, oh, I don't want to sit in the front row because I can't afford to replace a computer, especially not on the fly when I'm supposed to be doing work with it. Like, that's just not going to happen. And so I've always like sat second row because of it. Well, Kevin Arnovitz wants me to sit in the front row with him. And I was like, all right, I love Kevin. I'll sit next to him and take a picture. I'm like, pro, this seat is awesome. Con, I'm going to die. Like, it's possible I'm going to die. And sure enough, either the first or – no, it was the second game, I believe. Kyle Weems comes crashing into the table just off to my right, but enough to where I'm trying to brace the table, keep my laptop on, in one piece, and not die. And he was nice. He, you know, checked back to make sure everybody was okay. It was fine. I go over to the other gym the next day. Sit in the front row so I can watch the Timberwolves. In the next game after that, I believe it was Michael Gladness, blocks a shot that goes whizzing by my head. And then Jonas Valanciunas came barreling towards me. And I've been mindful, like, oh, if it looks like a guy's coming, I'm going to brace myself. I'm going to get my laptop, you know, secure. But Jonas is huge. Like this whole, like, oh, he's best shape of his life, put on 10 to 15 pounds. Like, he's legitimately put on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. Like, if you see him in person, he's just filled out. Like, he is a gigantic man. And he came, like, barreling towards me. And it was going to be directly, like, hitting me. And I thought, and I didn't even, like, I didn't even react. I just thought, oh, boy. Like, that was the only thought that went into my head. It was just like, here we go. Like, this is going to be bad. And luckily, he stopped himself right before. But now, I do not want to sit front row. I don't. I feel like I'm just being attacked constantly. I'm living in fear.
You should definitely go watch Pacific Rim, because what you're talking about, just that's what it reminds me of. is like the buildings being torn apart as these giant creatures and robots go tearing through them.
I am currently the building in every Transformer movie.
So let's start with Shredder, actually. Let's go there.
Sure.
The Hawks matched this 4-year, $32 million offer for Teague.
Yeah, which is not a bad contract.
It's a great price, I think, for Teague. I think Teague's worth $440.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was worried about him getting in that $10 million per year range, just because I do think it's easier to get a point guard who does what he does. But $432, I think that's great value.
Yeah, and so, and they match the offer sheet and they keep him. But I'm looking at this, and if Shredder is what almost everyone that has seen him. It'd be one thing if there were real questions, but almost everyone that has watched him either in his international career, his workouts, or in summer league has just come away being like, God, this guy is great. And it's – I don't know what the value is in keeping Teague if you're just going to – I mean, I guess you can move him for 3 years, 24 pretty easy. Yeah. If Shredder comes out – like if Teague gets hurt this year, let's say Teague goes down for a month with a calf contusion – God forbid, because I love Teague. And Shredder comes out and just absolutely just kills everything. You move Teague pretty easy in the summer, much the way the Sixers moved Drew Holiday. You can find a situation like that to be able to move him. It just seems weird to me on the surface to be like, oh, well, let's just go ahead and do this. Let's have Teague, and then let's also have Shredder, despite the fact that Shredder may be the starter in 2 years, if everything goes right.
Yeah, you know, Shredder has... He hasn't shot the ball well. I think he's like 33%, and there's 30 or 33%, something like that, in his first two games. But I actually like his shooting stroke. I was unfamiliar with it heading in. Like, I've seen more just like, oh, here's how he runs the team and whatever highlight videos are there. But his shooting stroke's better than I expected it to be. And that's like really the concern with him. But outside of that, like, this guy's just like really savvy point guard, and not just for his age. Like, he just looks in complete control of whatever's going on. His composure is great. He doesn't panic when he's pressured from a trap or just a aggressive defender. Like, you can just tell this guy. I don't know. He's gonna be a great point guard, but he's gonna be really good.
Like those lineups next year with Shredder, Jenkins, Korver, Millsap, Horford.
Yeah.
Oof.
And he already has the chemistry he has on the court with Lucas Nogueira, is kind of unreal that they're connecting for lobs at the rate they are, after just playing with each other for a short time. I mean, it's pretty impressive. And you get him shooters on the floor to pass to, and he'll have that with Jenkins. He'll have that with Korver. I even like the idea of putting him with Lou Williams, assuming Lou's able to bounce back. Like, that's just going to be a really fun second unit.
Yeah. I can already feel like the Hawks stock rising. Like, we're 2 months away from looking at season predictions, and I'm already like sensing there's going to be a huge kind of belly of energy underneath the Hawks, just like it was last year.
Yeah.
So, we gotta talk about this Andrei Kirilenko thing, man.
We should. Let me make sure there are no KGB bugs in my room first. Hold on.
First off, I need to get this out of the way. You can question the situation without it being xenophobia. This is driving me crazy.
Oh, sure.
Like, if an American business owner had the background of Prokhorov, and this kind of connection. And Kirilenko turned down the kind of deal that he did from the – like, he demanded – the reports were that he demanded $8 million from the San Antonio Western Conference Finals reportering Spurs.
Yeah.
And then he goes and signs for $3 million with an opt-out with the Nets.
The Wolves allegedly offered him the full mid-level, and he didn't even consider it. Or his agent didn't consider it.
Like, I get the idea that he wants to play for a contender, but the Nets fail both categories. They fail the money aspect and the contender aspect. They fail on both counts. I get that Garnett and Pierce are going to make them better. They're going to be a much better team. I'm probably going to peg them for 50-plus wins next season. They're going to be very good. I'm not denying that. This is not a championship contender.
Question. With Kirilenko, like, let's just say Kirilenko is healthy for the playoffs.
It does put them very close.
Yeah, they're close, right?
It puts them – I did a column the last week on sub-contenders. It puts them, in my mind, up there with Indiana.
Yeah.
As it's Indiana and they are 1-2. Now, I still like Indiana to beat them in a series because I saw how old Kevin Garnett was last year.
Right.
And Paul Pierce was even older.
I remember Kevin Garnett retiring, but maybe your your recollection of this is better than mine.
Right, and look, Darren can hit an MVP level, and if he does, like, and everyone wants to talk about his second half of the season, I get nervous because he got so many tank teams. But okay, cool, fine, that's all right. I'm with you on all this. Everything is okay. I still think I'm just saying the bar high. I'm not downing the Nets. I'm just saying the bar's high. So if we say that, then and no matter what you say, you can't say that the Nets are more of a contender than the Spurs. The Spurs are a month away from being 28 seconds from an NBA title. It does not get much more contender-ish than that.
Right.
You know, so I think it's okay for people to go, wait, what? And there's always been this perception that Prokhorov was willing to bend the rules. There's been this perception that that's been his attitude. Because he's honestly – think about this. This is a guy that was linked to having conversations with Carmelo Anthony that were supposed to be against the tampering situations with Denver. And the same situation developed with the Nets. There have been multiple allegations, nothing proved because it would just, there's no point in pursuing it. And maybe there's nothing there, but we don't know. But there's been these kind of conversations about the Nets and how they do business before. So I'm just saying it's not xenophobia. Now, I'm not saying it definitely for sure happened. But I think it's okay to, one, make jokes about it, and two, to ask the question, like, wait, what? Why is this happening?
I don't think it's xenophobia at all. I think it's just legit, like, there's enough history to kind of turn your head a little bit. It would be like
the guy could be American, he could be Canadian. Well, not Canadian, they're too nice, but yeah. He could be any nationality, and this would not affect my perception that something about this does not seem right. The signing's awesome because I think you can. I asked this question initially, and man, people. By the way, another thing: if I ask a question, that's not trolling. Like yesterday when I said, when I made fun of the Knicks because the Nets got Garnett, so they got Bargnani, and the Nets got Kirilenko, so they got Artest, and I said the Knicks are struggling with the object of this game. That was trolling. That was me trolling. But when I asked the question with Kirilenko, does Pierce move to the bench? That's not trolling.
No, I actually
look. Yeah. Like your best lineup, your best overall lineup, factoring defense, is Deron Williams, Joe Johnson, Andre Kirilenko, Kevin Garnett, Brook Lopez. That gives you scoring from Deron and Brook. It gives you defense from Joe Johnson, Garnett, and Kirilenko. And all three of your middle three guys, your 2, 3, 4, are all hyper versatile. That gives you the best overall starting set, and that's usually what guys do with to start a game. Like, Pierce comes off the bench with Jet as their secondary scorers, and you've got guys that can create your own shot, which they struggled with last year, and guys that can, you know, body up and do a little bit of defense, at least from a physical standpoint, if not from an actual athleticism point at this point in their careers. Like, Jet, Blatch, and Pierce off the bench, that's great.
Yeah, and you know, it's not really ripping what Paul Pierce is. It's the situation. It's like, Paul Pierce is a starter. He's a starter in this league. You don't bring him off the bench. It's like, well, yeah, Manu Ginobili would have been a starter for 29 other teams throughout his career, but he was great in that role. Like, I think Pierce could be great in a six-man role, and not just because he's too talented to come off the bench, but because of what he is at this point in his career, like, if you just let him concentrate on scoring and coming into the game and kind of picking apart after viewing it for, you know, 6 or 7 minutes, I just think that's an incredibly valuable way to maximize what he does.
Yeah, and you need to see what that – I mean, starting is honestly a little bit overblown because it's all about who finishes the game, and the end lineups are going to be traditionally – it's going to be Darren, Joe, Pierce, Kirilenko, and Garnett. That's what they'll do to close games.
Yeah.
Like, I love Brook Lopez, but he won't be in there. He just won't be. That's standard for almost all bigs. The bigs don't really close the games. But, like, you know, if this was 2005 when Andre Kirilenko was 23 – Paul Pierce is starting because Paul Pierce is an MVP candidate.
Right.
That was 8 years ago. 8 years ago. People who had children that year, their kids are now 8. That's a long time.
Minimum.
So,
minimum they're 8 years old.
Right? Minimum 8 years old. So I just think that you have to look at it as, you know, and Kirilenko's 32. You know, Kirilenko is 32 and Pierce is 35. It's not a massive difference, but Pierce did show a pretty significant drop. It was weird because Pierce had these – Pierce's numbers last year were great, but watching him, I just kept being like, man, he is struggling.
Well,
he is having a hard time.
Especially defensively.
Yeah, and that started in 2012, honestly. I saw that in the playoffs. Like, when he was trying to – they tried putting him on LeBron during that series when they almost beat him in the conference finals, and they had to abandon that almost immediately because Pierce was just getting torched.
Yeah.
So I just think that those are kind of things that need to be asked. And so I do think that Kirilenko is a great signing. It's awesome. I think it's really incredible, and it makes the Nets it's one of those signings that basketball people are going to go, like, holy crap, that makes them exceptionally good. And that's why people are so mad about it. And you can say they're just mad because he signed with Brooklyn, and that's accurate. Like, if he took less money to go join the Bobcats, nobody cares.
Right.
Like, they're mad because he joined this team, and now they're a threat. That said, I still maintain it's – the finals to me proved beyond any sort of doubt that, man, you can push them to the brink, and when LeBron hits that gear, it's done. I just don't think there's anybody that can match them. Right. But that said, there's always things that can happen. Things change, and they did look old last year. And if we're looking at guys, if let's say Wade or Bosch had a serious injury, again, God forbid, but they had a serious injury and things just didn't go right for the Heat next year, I think the Pacers and Nets would be in line for a pretty climactic conference finals to determine it. Now,
I also want to throw the Bulls in there. I know Derrick Rose is coming off injury, and we don't know how he's going to look and blah, blah, blah. I think they're going to be killer, and I think he's going to be fine.
I'm in the same place I've been with the Bulls, which is they'll be good, but I just feel like they have a ceiling, and that ceiling is not high enough. So.
Oh, see, I feel like with what they've done to add to their bench this offseason, I'm all in. I think they're right there with the Pacers in terms of second best in the East.
It'll be interesting to see.
That's the assumption that Rose is fine.
Well, I'm going to have to just see.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to see Rose, because part of it is, like, I remember Rose differently. I remember Rose the way I always remember Rose, and it's been so long, it's kind of hard, but I always remember him as his individual plays are at LeBron level of there are, like, he makes those plays that you find yourself just going, God, that was amazing hours later.
Yeah.
Just the shots he would hit and his ability to step up and make those plays. But the overall production, I was always kind of like, there's some holes there. It's interesting because you said what they've done, but I still have questions about the bench. Who's their backup center?
Nazi Muhammad.
Yeah.
But you just need 10 minutes out of him. Because you throw Taj Gibson in there to play the five quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, and you also, and I have to factor that Noah's going to be healthier. So
yeah.
So I think that's an impact, like an impact. Boozer was still really good last year. He showed no signs of slowing down as he gets older. I think the Deng question is going to be interesting because I still feel like they're slowly headed more and more towards trading him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
It's become, but they've got Jimmy Butler. So yeah, I think that there's things to be done there. I do want to, however, we want to jump from the Nets to, am I being too hard on the Knicks?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, they were.
I don't understand the Bargnani thing still. I mean, I get it, but I don't. I don't know. I think they're throwing moves at the wall and seeing what's cooked spaghetti. Like, that's what they're doing.
54 games last year. That's a lot of games that they won.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be awesome in the regular season. I think it's just finding, like, what matchups can they exploit in the playoffs to make them successful.
For me, it's I don't buy Prigioni as a long-term kind of answer. I don't think that he's great as your backup point. I like him as a third guard. I'm not super on him as a second. I feel like he needs something better. And, I mean, you know my feelings on J.R. Smith. That's pretty evident. I don't feel like J.R., it's going to wobble from game to game, month to month. It's also going to wobble from year to year.
Right.
Is he gonna have another career season?
By the way, J.R. Smith's dad was in attendance yesterday wearing a J.R. Swish t-shirt.
I can't blame him for that because I would do the same.
Probably. No, I would too. No, I loved it. I love that man just for that.
Yeah, I like it when the dads get really excited.
Yeah.
I mean, their bench is obviously weaker because even though Camby and Novak, you can argue about their usefulness, those are still two guys that really had an impact. Or at least during the regular season, you know. They did work for them from time to time. Maybe Novak more than Camby, and you need shooters. And then I really think losing Chris Copeland was bad.
Yeah, that hurts. I do wonder. I think there are a couple guys on the summer league team that could actually not replicate what he did last year, but kind of fill the role a little.
Yeah.
If they decide to bring them into camp and give them a shot, like there are some big men on the summer league. Like Terrence Jennings is one that I'm really starting to like. Who maybe we'll find out more about him in the next, you know, 5 or 6 months, but he's a guy that's kind of piqued my interest, and I thought, oh yeah, Copeland's gone. They could start grooming this guy for that situation.
Oh, the Knicks waived James White too. That's too bad.
Sure.
Sure. If they get Meta, what does that change about them?
I guess Meta's still a good defender, right? He's not locked down.
If we think of a bench unit that features, let's even go not a pure bench unit. Let's like mix in some, so like Felton, Shumpert, Meta, Amari, Tyson.
Yeah, that's a pretty fun lineup.
Or like Meta with Bargnani and Tyson.
Yeah.
Can Meta guard the power forwards?
Yeah, Meta can guard power forwards.
So then all Bargnani's got to do is watch the perimeter. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And so then you've got – Felton's a pretty underrated defender. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
So you've got Felton, who's good, Shumpert, who's good. Like they've got some defense there on that team. Maybe they got better defensively. Maybe that's where I need to factor.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, adding
– Did I just say a team that picked up Andrea Bargnani got better at defense?
And is getting a healthy Amari Stoudemire.
Man.
Summer.
Because I feel like a jerk. I don't want to be constantly down on him. I just
no. That's the thing is that they are. I mean, I think you would admit they're kind of a problem in the regular season. Like they're very good. They're a very good.
I mean, they won 54 games, so obviously they are.
Yeah, they're a very good regular season team.
Well, let me adjust that. They're a real problem in November and April.
I think they're a very good regular season team, and then I think because of the way their team is constructed. There are certain matchups that they need to be successful in the playoffs. And I guess successful is subjective. Like if they make it to the second round and get knocked out in an East that is starting to look more and more top heavy with, you know, the Pacers, obviously the Heat, the Nets now and let's assume the Bulls, you know, if they lose in the second round, there's no shame in that. But if they're looking to be title contenders with this team, then yeah, then it's a, then you're, if their goal is to do this all to be a title contender, which I mean technically it is, but if we're going to be realistic about it, then you're not being too harsh, because if they fancy themselves a title contender, then my god, no, they're not.
Let's move on. I want to talk about
unleash the Bynum.
Oh man. Yeah. So I wrote a whole thing. I'm not even going into the Cavs fan thing. There's no point. I'm a jerk. Everyone hates me. That's fine. I wrote a thing about how it can work. And if he's healthy, I was thinking about this yesterday too. If he's healthy, I was trying to put a number of wins on them. I think 45 might be in line.
Yeah. If he's healthy, if Kyrie's healthy, I mean, Kyrie's like kind of, you kind of have to wonder a little bit, is he injury prone? Just because he's had weird injuries. But then again, I don't know if the injuries have been significant enough to keep him out that long, or if they've just been like, hey, look, we need draft picks anyway. So
I need to talk.
So
take, to
your, take your time.
I need to find a doctor to actually describe to me what he would describe as injury prone, because there's two different definitions. There's a guy is injury prone because he has a repetitive issue, because I would label Steph Curry as having an ankle issue that's repetitive and therefore he's kind of injury prone.
Sure.
And I would say that Kyrie Irving has freak injuries. And a lot of people used to say that Greg Oden had freak injuries. And I was like, well, he keeps having them on the same knee in the same way. That to me is being prone to having an injury issue. And maybe they both are. I don't know. I'd like to see what a medical doctor would describe as, like, injury prone.
Yeah, I don't have an answer. I don't know. Like, I just feel like I'm just conditioned like, oh, this guy gets injured a bunch of times each season. He's injury prone. But I don't – when you break it down like that, I have no idea.
Right. So that's kind of the question. Like, Anderson Varejao is another one. It's like he got a staph infection last year. Like,
right.
Like, some of this stuff – like, Gerald Wallace was one where people were like, oh, he's injury prone. And I was like, he had a busted lung. His lung collapsed.
By Andrew Bynum.
By Andrew Bynum. So,
yeah, if Bynum's healthy and if Kyrie's healthy, and by healthy I mean like 68 games, I don't think 45's out of the question. Like they've got Bynum, Anderson, Thompson, you know, Kyrie. Like, let's say Anthony Bennett gives them solid contributions as a rookie. Like that's a good squad.
Yeah. So I think 45 wins, a playoff spot, maybe a six seed. That's pretty good.
Especially a playoff spot where it seems like half the East is just trying to get out of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the other thing is like a lot of the teams are – I think we're going to see elevated win totals this year for the playoff teams because of Tankapalooza. I think that there's just going to be so much of teams going bad that at the end of the year you're just going to see teams – like these playoff teams going on long winning streaks because nobody wants to win.
Right, and we'll see the Bucks win 38 games and get the eighth seed.
Exactly. This one's been driving me nuts, though. They think that it's absurd that I talk about this lineup that's going to be Kyrie, Jack, and Waiters at the end of games. They're like, why would they possibly run that? And I was like, did you watch Golden State at all last year? Like, it's my job to watch all of the teams, not just your crappy team. I watch your crappy team and teams that aren't so crappy. And the team that wasn't as crappy as you ran Jarrett, Jack, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson at the end of games. That's what they did.
Who's their coach? Mike Brown. I don't think Mike Brown's going to play Deion Waiters at the end of games.
Hmm.
I think in theory it's a possibility, but I don't think Waiters is going to defend enough for Brown to reward him.
Maybe I think it depends on how well Karasov and if Alonzo G were to somehow – like if Alonzo G were to just have one of those years where he's playing really well.
Yeah.
I could see him kind of
– I think they would keep G out there just because – switch possession, that's their primary wing defender, right?
Or Clark.
Sure.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come Earl on. The fact that he got $4.5 million is ridiculous. $4.5 million per year. That's way too much for Earl Clark. He's not
good. How much would you pay for Earl Clark?
The minimum.
I told you, man. I told you all year. That was the Lakers' contract of the year. It always happens.
That's fine, but he's not good. That's my point. That's always been my point. He's not a good NBA player.
I like him in. I don't think he's a good NBA player. I think he's an okay NBA player. I like him in lineups with going small ball with him at the four. I think that would be okay. I like the idea of putting him and Bennett because he can guard the guys that Bennett can't, and that lets Bennett work at the four offensively. So
they should bring Omri Cassidy back.
He's gone to the Rockets. That's not happening.
Ooh, what about CJ Miles at the end of games?
Yeah, that's the other question. You could do like. I'm and everyone thinks it's like, oh, it's too small. It's like, I always get this problem because I'm like, look, there's about four small fours in the league that can effectively post you up, and those guys are going to kill you no matter who you throw at them.
Right.
Like, you know, and then there's Josh Smith who can but won't. So, right. And even Melo to a certain degree. It's like, you can't have him out there on Melo. well, if Melo's not, you got a 50-50 chance of whether or not Melo's going to be like, oh, hey, I'm much bigger than this guy. Let me back him down and destroy him. Or, face up, pull away 18-footer? Face up, pull away 18-footer. So I think it's okay to do that. Oh, I want to talk to you. So I am sad because the Dallas Mavericks are the Dallas Mavericks now, and this is sad.
Oh, man.
This is not good, man. This is – it is
– honestly, here's a question. Like, and this is – I'm 60% sure I'm not trolling here. Say 55. I'm 55% sure I'm not trolling here. Who's had a worse offseason, the Lakers or the Mavericks? And I say this, I know the Lakers have lost Dwight Howard, and they were supposed to keep him, and that changes things in L.A., or maybe it changes things in L.A. But the Mavericks have been supposed to be retooling around the end of Dirk's career for, you know, a couple of years now, and I still defend the decision to not overpay to retain a title contender that you didn't know was capable of repeating. I'm okay with that, but they have been in a holding pattern for a long time, and you and I have talked a lot about on this podcast. Like, if you're in a holding pattern, you're in trouble in this league, and that's where they are. They're in a holding pattern, and
it's worse than that. They're committing long term money.
Yeah, I think we talked about this about Jose Calderon, where the first defense of his contract was, well, you can use the stretch provision.
It's a bad start.
That's not the first thing you want to hear.
And then, think of it this way, depending on how it works out, because there's the way that the cap deal is being structured, it's up in the air still. You could, at last I heard, maybe it's changed, you have at minimum, between Monte Ellis and Colin, $15 million per year, at maximum $17 million per year, Monte Ellis and Jose Calderon.
That sounds like a lot.
For 3 years.
That sounds, when you put it that way, that sounds like sadness.
Shane Larkin. Oh, hey, we got a good backup point. Oh, no, he's hurt. He had to have surgery. And he'll come back for a regular season, but it's just like, that's not good. Devin Harris. Oh, hey, bringing Devin Harris back. That move, I was like, oh, I like that. When Calderon can't defend worth a damn, they can bring Devin Harris in. Nope, he's got a foot injury. They're going to have to scrap the deal until at least the start of the regular season.
Hey,
they signed Wayne Ellington. This is where we've gotten to, man. They're trying to build a team around. I'm looking at this.
I think that's my favorite move of theirs of the offseason is Wayne Ellington.
Look, here's a great one, okay? Here's a great one. Let me ask you this. Which three players do you like more? This is a great one for you. Okay. Calderon, Harris, Monte Ellis, Darren Collison, Chris Kamen, OJ Mayo.
Oh my God.
You must choose.
Oh my God. I choose death. I'll go Calderon, Harris,
Monte. Oh, you just can't get past your OJ Mayo and Darren Collison.
No. Give Chris Kamen equal partnership there. He made partner in this firm of Collison, Mayo, and Kamen. He made partnership in the worst NBA law firm possible.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's with Darren Collison and OJ Mayo, I'm like, their careers have enough in front of them to where they could make a dramatic turn for the positive, because we've seen guys do that in the past, with Chauncey Billups and guys like that. Even if it's like Calderon is not going to get better. That's it. And at this point, I can honestly, as much as I really have held out for him because of that 2011 year, Monte Ellis is not going to get any better. This is who he is. He is what he is. And that's fine.
Yeah.
He gets paid $10 million for it. Good for him.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he's a scorer. That's literally all he does. And he's, Milwaukee wasn't even good at that.
Yeah. I feel bad for Dirk. I also feel bad for Sean Marion.
Yeah, Marion, I obviously feel bad for Dirk, because you can tell this is testing him.
Yeah, Dirk's like, but you said.
Yeah.
Because you said Darren, and then that didn't happen, and then we got all these other guys, and those didn't work either. And
he's publicly saying, I will take a huge pay cut to bring in another guy, and it's still not enough.
I mean, Ellis is, Ellis's assist percentage is the only thing that kind of keeps me hanging on, where I'm like, you know, he's one of those guys that quietly winds up putting up assists.
Yeah, he's like
five. You notice it in the flurry of terrible shots.
It's like five or six a game, right?
So that's like, and I made that comment, like, that was the big thing last year, is everybody's like, why can you not get the ball to Dirk Nowitzki? And it's, well, he's being guarded really well, and their point guards can't do it. I didn't understand. I never understood why.
They could always, while they wait for Shane Larkin to heal, they could always sign Mike James.
Oh, God.
No, he's available, I think.
It was six last year. He had six assists per game last year with a 27.1 assist percentage.
Yeah.
That's surprisingly pretty good for a shooting guard.
But he shot horribly, right?
What?
He shot horribly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was – here's the awesome part. Monte Ellis shot 42% last year, okay? 41.6. That's 2.6% better than Brandon Jennings did.
Sure.
Like, this is why I don't understand. Brandon Jennings – well, I guess I do understand, because now Brandon Jennings is out there and is now stranded. For all these deals, you really have to say, man, like, the fact that Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis had such a hard time getting deals says a lot about the fact that NBA GMs are getting smarter.
And that's the thing. It's like, I do – like, there's been backlash to the CBA, right? Like,
yeah.
Because Kyle Korver's getting 4 years, $24 million or whatever the hell he got. Like, we're seeing these role players kind of cash in a little bit. And the smaller market teams are having to be careful while the Brooklyn Nets can spend $183 million on the payroll with tax payments this year.
Yeah.
But I do think that – I do think it has worked in the sense that the fact that guys like Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis are struggling to find deals, and even Andre Kirilenko struggled to find a deal. Like, they're not just throwing money at names anymore. I mean, they're still throwing money at guys. It's not perfect. And I don't know that it's progress, but it's different. It feels different.
What if this is the change? It used to be that the CBA, with the way it was structured, the way the market was structured, teams were killing themselves and losing a lot in small markets because they were making horrible decisions. And now they're just bad. Like, now, not even bad, but they are who they are. They're no longer – it's like, well, they would be really good if they could get rid of this terrible contract. Because now it's – well, no, they have pretty reasonable contracts. They're just not able to get good enough free agents because that's how the markets work. And then we're all able to accept it. Like, there's no longer any excuse. You're not able to say, oh, well, it's not fair because of the market system and they can throw more money. It's like, well, no. Like, they paid for value guys. They got what they got. If you want to get – now it's like, if you want to get better guys, you better be good enough to pull them in.
Right.
Or have connections and be giving them money on the side. Just kidding. But not really. But kidding.
Kidding, but not really.
But not really. But that's the only way to do it. And I don't have a problem with like, that's part of the hilarious part, is I don't have a problem with what the Knicks and Nets are doing. Because they're throwing lots and lots of money at big names.
Yeah.
But I'm still looking at them and I'm like, that hasn't made them into instant contenders. They're better teams. But the Knicks lost in the second round this year with Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire, Tyson Chandler, J.R. Smith. Like, legitimate names. Jason Kidd. They lost with legitimate names. And it's... that's been the other thing I think has been really cool, is that the superstar teams, and I wrote a big thing about this last week, is you can't just throw them together. You have to be able to play together, and you have to learn how to do it, and it takes some time.
Yeah.
Turns out basketball is more than just guys, talented guys playing together. It's a lot of that, but it's not all that.
Yeah, it's a little hard.
Yeah, it's a little hard.
It's been known to be hard.
You know, so I think in that respect, it's really worked well. Anything else you want to catch up on?
Sleep.
No rest for the wicked, man. No rest for the wicked. I'm trying to think what else. There's got to be something else. I feel like I just want to do a podcast a day, like a mini podcast a day, talking about the Pelicans, because I'm fascinated with what they've done. Oh, hey, how's it work? Did you see Otto Porter?
Yes.
How do you look?
Boring.
Oh.
No, and I don't. That's not even like a pejorative. Like he's a very boring player. Like he had a breakaway dunk that was just this like basic two-handed dunk. Like didn't pull, didn't like throw any power. Just a little flush, and even people were joking like, oh my god, don't show out too much, Otto. Like he's just a very boring player. I think I don't like his passing, but I like the way he moves. Like I think his off-ball stuff's really good. And at least from what I've seen in the first couple games, like he'll be a I think he'll be a fine role player. Like I wouldn't expect a huge. Actually, we had this discussion, which I feel like was interesting. If you knew that Otto Porter was going to be Tayshaun Prince's career, would you take him at the third pick?
Immediately.
Yeah, I said absolutely. And the person I was talking to was like, really? Why? I was like, well, because it's this draft. I was like, you get Tayshaun Prince in this draft, that's a great draft pick. I was like, you get Tayshaun Prince with a third pick in next year's draft that's supposed to be so star-studded, like, that wouldn't be good value.
Do you think – I mean, here's a question. Do you think that is it really that you don't know, or do you suspect for some reason the next year's class is going to be underwhelming?
I'm not saying it's going to be underwhelming. I just – after the last couple of years, like, we saw – it still bothers me that this revisionist history has happened. But, like, Austin Rivers was the next big thing.
Yeah.
Coming out of high school. He was. Next big thing. He was, like there were, actual people saying, like, wonder if he's the next Kobe because he's this gifted scorer in high school, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not saying that was a good comparison for him, but that conversation happened. Like, he was the next big thing. Shabazz Muhammad was the next big thing coming out of high school. Like, he was the number one high school prospect, and now, you know, some people were complaining that he got picked with the 14th pick in a weak draft.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, the high school – I'm starting to question the high school evaluations.
Yeah.
And there are certain I think we'll have enough guys. Like, there are clearly enough guys in this class to where you're not going to miss on all. Like, we're not going to have 8, 9 Austin Rivers. But I wonder if we have 8 or 9 stars, or if we only have like 2 or 3. And even 2 or 3 great stars in a draft, that's a fantastic draft. But I'm just starting to become hesitant with how the high school evaluations go.
I try and stay away from guys that are clearly involved in the hype circuit, and I stick with a former colleague of ours at CBSSports.com, now at the ESPN, congrats for him, Jeff Goodman. Goodman's a guy I turn to a lot because Jeff was one of the first guys, because I was like, oh, like Shabazz is like the real deal, right? And he was like, nah. I was like, really? He's like, no. It's like, right, but everyone, all the – I've seen and won mixes, and he's, you know, and just like, you know, I just don't think that – I think that a lot of that's manufactured, and I don't think a lot of it's accurate. And then I started talking to other kind of people that are in just kind of the same vein. If you find the tier of information, they're able to give you pretty good evaluations. And what's been surprising to me is you have the mega hype around Wiggins, and then guys that are kind of that next tier, the filter, like you have to get through them in order to really be considered. Everyone's like, no, holy crap.
Yeah.
That's what I think is why I'm so high on it. Because it's look, I've watched the video. I'm not good enough as a talent evaluator to be able to tell you that these guys are that. All I know is I pay a lot of attention to what is specifically said, and there's the pattern is very positive. Now, that's not to say there's nothing negative, because there's always something negative. There are always guys that love to get out in front and say, he's not that good.
Yeah,
he's way overhyped because if you're right, you look like a freaking genius.
Right, exactly.
Like at this point, hyping Wiggins doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, and I'm not trying. I'm definitely not trying to be that guy. I'm just trying to wait. Like I'm not.
No,
that's
totally good. That's a great. I mean, yeah. You know, hell, some of the best guys in our business, including Ken Berger of CBSSports.com and Zach Lowe from Grantland and Rob Mahoney, they don't pay a lick of attention to anybody until you get in the league.
Yeah,
and they avoid all of this nonsense.
Yeah, I've seen as many of the and one mixtapes of Andrew Wiggins probably as you have, and there are things to absolutely love with him, and there are things I have real concerns about, that I've seen, people are like, oh, his handle's so great, and I'm like, yeah, it's great in high school, I think it's sloppy for the NBA, and that will come with time. Like, you know, LeBron's handle was sloppy in high school. Yeah. I mean, that happens. Like, high school players don't typically know how to dribble unless you're a point guard. Like,
the big thing
– that's why they press all the time, because it's easy to get guys to turn the ball over because they're not developed like that. But I recognize there are huge skills in them. I'm just – it high school talent just sucks. Like that's what it is. The competition they play against sucks, and they're not going to play against that in two seasons. And so I just, like, I try to be patient with, oh, I either think this guy's good or think this guy's bad. I just, like, yeah, I know that guy exists. Let's see a little bit more.
The best thing, the thing I'm really trying to focus on, because everyone, if I talk about tanking, they say, well, what if Wiggins isn't any good? I'm like, you're not even worried about Wiggins. That's not it.
You've got Randall, you've got Parker, you've got the Harrison twins, you've got
Randall? Gordon? Gordon looks amazing.
Yeah, Eric Gordon's gonna be pretty fun.
That's the thing, is it's like, well, what if you tank and you don't get that number one pick? And it's like, then you still made out pretty well, because even if you don't get it, even if they're not, even if you get it, like, I'm not saying there's gonna be six Hall of Famers in this draft. I'm not insane.
Yeah.
This isn't 84. But even if you get a guy that is if you're able to say this guy's going to start from day one because he's good enough, you have just landed a phenomenal rookie talent.
Yeah.
Like, that's still really good. Like, there are so many guys in this draft that I look at and I'm like, well, I should probably not start. That's just not a good idea. Oh, man. Alex Len having the second knee or ankle surgery, like, that's the only thing holding me up on the Suns. That's the only thing. Because I looked at what the Suns did this summer, and I was like, they got Eric Bledsoe. Caron Butler doesn't matter. Malcolm Lee is whatever. They drafted Len. Okay, that's a question mark. But they got Goodwin and Oriaki, who I both like. They let Jermaine O'Neal leave. They traded Jared Dudley. Like, they've managed to be so constrained. They haven't done anything stupid.
Yeah.
We got to go. I'm keeping you too long. You've got stuff to do. You need to get stuff written so you can sleep. And we need to get off this podcast. But I've enjoyed this. Hopefully we can do it again tomorrow. I hope you
– If I'm alive.
I hope you keep your money, your liver, and your sanity.
That's the amazing thing. I have not gambled yet.
See, I don't even know how to –
I don't even know
what to do with that right now.
I've been here since Thursday afternoon. I have not gambled one bit. Only with my life.
I say that, but honestly, when I go to Vegas for Summer League, I never did, because I know – the problem is, like, I'm a poker player, so you can't just go and do a little bit. It's like, if I was to be like, oh, well, I got some time, I'll go play the 9 o'clock tournament, that's going to turn into it being 5 o'clock on a week and a half later, me being like, oh, I've been at the table for a week and a half.
I will not reveal names. But there was a hilarious conversation the other night between two people that I was having dinner with in a big group who were thinking about going to play poker. And one said, oh, should we try to cheat? And another person commented, yeah, that's probably something to figure out on the fly. Like, maybe you should have more of a system in place.
My favorite NBA Summer League story revolves around a rookie a couple of years ago that you and I spotted playing craps at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep. And another young player that used to play for the same organization was also spotted at a nightclub that was definitely 21 and older, and he was 19. So,
God bless Summer League. All right, Zach, have a good time.
I will try to. Thanks, Matt.